Don, is there anything in particular you will need me to screen share this evening?
You still have 11. First, there's 11 meditations on how to develop bodhicitta.
Okay.
And actually, the mantra Om Mani Padme Hum.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that, yeah, that should be on the prayers as well. Okay, easy enough. If there's anything else, just let me know.
Right.
I'll try to quickly find it.
Holy moly.
Good evening, good evening.
Hey, good evening.
Hi, JP.
So we have one more class after this.
Yes.
I believe.
Flown by. Everything's flying by right now.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's the way I feel. Welcome everyone on YouTube as well. We have several watching and joining us there.
All right, so I'm going to do, I'm going to start out with three prostrations and then let's do some meditation and talking, blah, blah, blah. Oh, by the way, this is, a lot of you might, I mean, some of you probably never heard this, but there's a mantra that you can do that makes the prostrations more powerful. And prostrations are the antidote to arrogance and really pride. So if you don't want to do prostrations, you can notice that your ego is going, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to. So it's a great antidote to pride, but it's also a way to purify the body, speech, and mind. And you can multiply the power of it by saying this mantra, which I, if you know it, you can say it, but it's Om Namo Manjushriye Namo Susriye Namo Uttamasriye Soa. I'll say it with each prostration if you decide to do it. And if you want to make it even a little bit more elaborate and powerful, you can imagine in front of you, in the space in front of you is the Buddha, maybe Thousand Arm Chinrezig, the Buddha of compassion, but not some statue, but like a light body, like a hologram, but alive and like a living presence. And we're doing these, we're paying homage to Avalokiteshvara or Chinrezig, the Buddha of compassion, as we do that, you know, rainbow colors of light and nectar enter the crown of our head and completely purify our body, speech, and mind. Make it a little bit even more interesting. Om Namo Manjushriye Namo Susriye Namo Uttamasriye Soa. Om Namo Manjushriye Namo Susriye Namo Uttamasriye Soa. Om Namo Manjushriye Namo Susriye Namo Uttamasriye Soa. Nice and chilly in here. It's good. Not a problem. All right. So I think the prayers are integrated into this little practice booklet that I found. And one of the obligations to this class, which I remembered just in the last few days, is to do this, to do a Shinrezig practice, the Buddha of Compassion, to develop bodhicitta. So this is a booklet that I got in 1980, believe it or not, in Kathmandu. It was published in 1980 at Kopan Monastery. So it's, and it's by Lama Zopa Rinpoche. It's called The Ever-Flowing Nectar of Bodhicitta, Annihilating the Evil, Self-Cherishing, Selfish Mind. Quite a title. So we'll do that in a minute. But let's start out by sitting up comfortably in a comfortable upright posture, spine straight. And you want to be aware of when you're, as one of my teachers says, when you're sitting, know that you're sitting. So pay attention. Straight, and again, the proper meditation posture, if you're sitting on a cushion, it's a little different, but in a chair, usually we recommend keeping your feet on the floor, your back straight, maybe slightly leaning forward, not like leaning back in a chair, and then the shoulders back and down, sort of the chest opening up a little bit. The chin slightly tucked in, and the tongue resting at the roof of the mouth. That sounds crazy, but it does work. It channels the saliva. So if you're trying to sit perfectly still and not, swallowing all the time, this actually helps. And then the eyes slightly open is ideal, although for some people better, individuals have different, some people like to close their eyes, some people are okay, but if you slightly open, allows a little bit of light in to keep the mind more alert, and that's what we want to do. Some people open their eyes and they soft gaze toward the, not a focused gaze toward the end of the nose, or even to the space in front of you, whatever works. We start out with about 3 deep breaths, feeling your abdomen expanding and then contracting. And with each breath, you want to slightly prolong the exhalation. Each breath, imagine you're letting go of whatever anxiety and fear and dread and whatever, anything negative that's circulating in your mind, just let it go with each exhalation. Now, let your mind rest on the experience of breathing, wherever it's easiest for you to find the breath, and follow the breath. And as the mind often does. It gets lost in thought. If you want to notice that, it's one of the ways to check in and to know that you're being mindful is to label whatever you're experiencing at the moment. Because sometimes we're just spacing out. So you go, oh. And just softly, this kind of a soft voice in your mind, you know, thinking or feeling. It could be a sound, hearing, or a sensation like your rear end in the chair, like firm or feeling like that. And once again, try to bring your mind without a lot of discursiveness to the experience of breathing. And count the breath. This is another technique that's really helpful. Just count the breath. So maybe with an inhalation, you go one. An exhalation, two. But again, silently. An inhalation, three. Exhalation, four. And so on up to 10. If you get lost, you just start over wherever you remember you were, or go back to 1. Get to 10, you start over again. It's not easy to count to 10, but doing this, but very worthwhile. If you get lost again, you just start over. Start over wherever you remember you were, or start over at 1. Now, once your mind has settled down that way, we're going to do a this Chinrezig, or but Chinrezig is the Tibetan word. Avalokiteshvara is the Sanskrit word. But using Chinrezig, let's see if we have a. There's a in the upper corner over there. There's a picture of the thousand-armed Chinrezig. You can see that up and above. And I don't know if there's a four-armed Chinrezig here or not. I don't see it. But anyway, there's another thousand-armed Chinrezig right there next to Linda on Tatanka. But anyway, just really quickly, it's just the embodiment of all the Buddha's wisdom, particularly compassion. And there's a lot of symbolic, features to it. Many heads, different colors, this nice little half smile on his face. And he's got a thousand arms literally reaching out in all directions to help suffering sentient beings. And in the center of every hand is this all-seeing eye of wisdom. So this is wisdom and compassion, particularly compassion, but wisdom, but of course compassion without wisdom is really not compassion. It actually can be quite dangerous. So important to have both. So in your mind's eye, it's enough. You don't have to visualize all the details. Just even sometimes just a sense of living presence of the Buddha of compassion. Is all that's necessary. Now, Lama Zopa, when he wrote this, this goes on for a while. If you've been around Lama Zopa, you understand. But he's not cryptic. He doesn't say things. He says things in a specific way. So he says, seated comfortably, generate a particularly virtuous motivation. So most virtuous motivation would be that we're doing this for others. We want to train. We want to help others. This is bodhicitta, right? We want to help others. We want to guide them from suffering to happiness. And the method for us to do that is to get our act together, to develop our qualities, eliminate our faults. So that's a particularly virtuous motivation. Then either make a glance meditation of the Lama Rim teachings from the beginning to the end with strong feeling and then think as follows. Now the Lama Rim meditations is quite long, so we're not going to do that. But we know that the bodhicitta motivations, that the ones that we've been working on, the 11 different meditations, and I'll go over those. The first one is equanimity, right, where we develop an equal regard for all beings. And then again, the second one takes some kind of faith, or at least willingness to creatively align with the notion of rebirth. So the second point is seeing all sentient beings as having been as close as our mother, or whoever was our caretaker, whoever made it possible for us to survive and thrive. We usually say all sentient beings as mother. And then we remember the next is to remember the kindness of all beings, not just when they were our mother, but even in this lifetime, everything we have, the food, the clothing, the electricity, all the things that we enjoy to make our lives easier are due to the kindness of others. So we're trying to remember the kindness of all beings. And then spontaneously, what should arise is this wish to repay the kindness. And then briefly, there are two aspects to developing compassion. And we've touched on the first one a moment ago. It's feeling at this point. It said that in the teachings that if you've done these other meditations, seeing others as having been mother, remembering their kindness, wishing to repay their kindness, you spontaneously, when you see somebody on the street, a stranger even, you feel some automatic sense of connection and warmth toward that being. And so that's the next meditation, which is kind of heartwarming love. This, you know, how nice it would be if all beings could be free of suffering. If they could be happy, you know, and may they be happy. And then, of course, the Bodhisattva's attitude is, I will cause them to be happy. But the wish that others could have happiness as causes, those are the words that describe the Buddhist definition of love. The wish that others could have happiness and its causes. Wish that all beings could have happiness and the causes. And that's, of course, we're not excluding ourselves here. And then for compassion to arise, not only do we have to have this feeling of closeness, but we have to recognize their suffering. And when we've studied the Four Noble Truths, we know the three different, the main kinds of suffering, the suffering of pain and change, and then the most sort of wicked of the kinds of suffering that we talk about is called the pervasive suffering. It's that we're caught in this endless cycle of death and rebirth, and we have no control over it, and we have no control over our minds. We have very little momentary control, mostly driven by self-centeredness. So because we understand the suffering of all beings, and some compassion arises in the mind. And may, how nice it would be if all beings could be free of suffering. May they be free of suffering. And I will cause them to be free of suffering. And then we go to the faults of self-cherishing selfishness. We talked about that. Self-cherishing selfishness. Like, if we just do a glance meditation through the 10 non-virtuous actions, right? You know, if we didn't have that, well, let's put it this way. If we're motivated by self-cherishing selfishness, then killing, stealing, adultery, sexual misconduct, lying, slander, harsh, frivolous talk, greed, hatred, ignorance, we call those the 10 non-virtuous actions. They're all possible. Only the mind that allows those actions to take place is a self-cherishing attitude. Our worst enemy. Seems like a friend, but it's our worst enemy. Because it's independence upon that self-cherishing, selfish mind that we create negative actions, which plant karmic seeds that ripen like frames on a projector as our mind literally projects our life, this thing called my life. And if we're seeing suffering, it's because of actions done out of self-cherishing. If we're seeing happiness, it's done out of actions motivated by cherishing others, which is the next step, which is the great benefits of cherishing others. You know, again, we can go back to, if we cherished others, we not only wouldn't kill them, but we'd save lives. We would actually take action to help. Not, you know, we wouldn't steal from others, but we would be generous. We would give others whatever they want and need. You know, we wouldn't behave in ways that were sexually harmful to others, but, you know, behave with integrity in our intimate relationships. If we cherished others, we wouldn't lie to them. We would be truthful. We would speak words of truth. We wouldn't like slander them and try to make them look bad. We would talk about their good qualities. You know, I love this. One teacher said that beings are swimming in good qualities. Well, I tell my kids this, they think I'm crazy. But we're swimming in, we have so many good qualities. We don't give ourselves credit for it. But we all have some compassion, some wisdom, some kindness, some power, some skillful. I mean, we all have, you know, some of these good qualities, and they just need to be nurtured. But our default mode as human beings is to pick ourselves and others apart, and it's not helpful. But seeing the, you know, again, cherishing others, as long, bumper sticker alone is open. We used to sell it here, called "For Happiness, Cherish Others." For happiness, cherish others. Now, the I kind of missed one meditation that I discussed it, but I didn't really go into any great detail about it. It's seeing the quality of self in others. And, you know, His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, I mentioned this last week, when he does this meditation, he imagines that, you know, there's one person, like he's a neutral person in the middle, or there is a neutral being in the middle. And on the one side is this one selfish, self-centered, egocentric, kind of nasty person who is me on a bad day. We might think like that. And that's me. And of course, that person cherishes themselves as being most precious. And on the other side, or like, you know, to make it real, we imagine it's like 10 or 15 really suffering people, maybe people that are at the homeless shelter, or, you know, living under a bridge, or just having a really hard time, even maybe hospital, whatever. We imagine real people having real difficult times. But they actually symbolize universal living beings, because others are infinite. And we imagine these beings, like, whose happiness is more important? The happiness of these 15 destitute beings, or the happiness of this one? And of course, this one is me. So my default attitude is, well, I'm the most, you know, my happiness is more important than theirs. But this person in the middle, who's like this, almost like a tennis match, is watching the net, you know, like, and he said, this guy over here, I don't know. I think these others are more important than this one. Others are more important than just this self-centered one. Think about that. We all are, you know, at the very least, we want to be able to develop the attitude that we're equal. Equal in one really crucial way. And you can practice this tomorrow. You can practice it tonight. When you get home, you look at someone in your house or anywhere. And the one thing you can notice that's very intimate about that person is that they don't want to suffer and they do want to be happy. And they're just like me in wanting happiness and not wanting to suffer. And we're all equal in that really fundamental, crucial way. And then the next contemplation is actually called exchanging self-cherishing for others. It's exchanging self for others. Now this, I've read like 3 or 4 different versions of this, how to do this. You know, Jeffrey Hopkins says, well, really what we're doing is we're exchanging, because right now our default mode is self-cherishing, right, or selfishness. And what we're doing is we're exchanging that self-cherishing selfishness for an attitude that cherishes others. Now, whatever I do is for others. Whatever I do is for others. I get up in the morning, I try to get a good night's rest so I can get up tomorrow morning and be of service to others. I, you know, clean myself up and get ready for work, and I might eat breakfast and so forth, so I'll be ready to go so I can be of service to others. And then I drive carefully to work. Again, constantly being mindful of others. It's very similar, you know, to bodhicitta mindfulness, that those of you who've been to the Lamp of the Path retreat, you know, we always talk about how to constantly be aware of others. In every action that we do, constantly trying to be aware of what others want and need, and trying to provide that. So one of His Holiness, I read this recently, His Holiness said, you know, ordinarily we label this one I, but let's, you know, this is a, and then he goes on this, I'm not going to go into it too much, but he says, there's not one thing in this, we feel like we own the body and mind, right? We say my body, mine, but guess what? We don't. The body was given to us by our parents. It's the product of the sperm and egg. And all the food and the clothing and everything we have is in dependence upon others. Yet we think you know, there is this real self-I that the owner of the body and mind, which in fact is just, you know, it's a habit, a mental habit that we have. So His Holiness says, instead of labeling yourself I, label others I. And think, are you looking at your spouse or your friend or your coworker, and you're labeling them I, and you might think, what do I want right now? What do I need right now? But you're looking at them. The I is not you. The I is actually you. The other person is actually you, but we're labeling them I. Exchanging, you know, the self-cherishing for cherishing others. What do I want? Well, I want to be happy. Don't want to suffer. I want to be loved. I want to be accepted. I want to be heard. I want to have food. I want to have my basic needs met. I want friends. I want pleasure. I want experiences. I want to have a rich life. That's what I want. And we might not even notice that if we hadn't brought to mind this notion of exchanging self for others. And then the next meditation is Tonglen. We call it Tonglen. And Tonglen actually means giving and taking, but the meditation is done differently. It's imagine, we'll start out with yourself. Imagine the space in front of yourself. Is yourself either later on tonight or tomorrow, or, you know, you can actually pick multiple selves. But we start out with yourself, let's say tomorrow. And imagine some difficulty that you might have to encounter, something real for you. Maybe it's a difficult person or some emotions that you've been battling with. You imagine that suffering, that dukkha, you imagine that in the form of black smoke, and it sort of comes off your body, you know, comes sort of out of your heart and out of your body, and in different ways to do this, but we'll just make it real simple. Imagine it's like a cloud of black smoke, and you gradually, you don't have to breathe it, but this is symbolizing all of your suffering from just tomorrow. But you want to think of it as, you want to think of a specific situation, you know, or people or whatever. And you imagine you breathe that black, dark smoke, and you don't have to do it in one breath. You can take your time as we're taking away our own suffering as we breathe slowly. We imagine that cloud of this black orb of smoke gradually comes closer and closer to our nose, just gets to our nose. And then we take a breath in, and that this, all of this suffering goes right through our nose and down to our heart. And at our heart is this like rock, this black rock, which symbolizes our self-cherishing attitude. And taking on this suffering, it goes down into the heart and instantly explodes this rock of self-cherishing. It completely disappears, like into, you know, a billion pieces of dust, completely disappears. And our body's full of light, full of positive energy, full of all the virtuous karma, everything we can want and need. That this light symbolizes all that's good, our future good karma, the virtuous actions and so forth. And then as we breathe out, we breathe this light out and it goes to you. And it goes slowly, and you can imagine it like a cloud maybe, or an orb of light. And that light goes out to you, and it doesn't have to go in one breath. It could, but better not to rush it. Better to get the feeling of what this light symbolizes, which is all of your virtues, all of your happiness. We're giving that to the you in front of you tomorrow. And that light comes closer, and it gets right up to you in front of your nose, and then you inhale it, and then your body's again completely full of light. The you in front, completely full of all these lights of all of the good stuff, the virtue, positive karma. And you can see, imagine yourself being very happy. And now you can imagine yourself like a week from now. I'm not going to do this, but this is how it goes. You want to start out with yourself. You can start out, you can go just, you know, a few hours from now, or a week from now, or a month from now, and even toward the end of your life. You know, you imagine the suffering that, you know, on your deathbed. You can imagine that. And you adds the black smoke, this black, when you breathe it into your heart, it destroys your self-cherishing attitude. You're full of light, and then you breathe out happiness. And you give yourself on your deathbed joy and freedom and happiness and enlightenment and the causes of all that's good. You can do that. You can practice that now. And then you can start working with other people, other real people, not these all sentient beings, because that doesn't mean anything to most of us. But deal with real people, your children, your spouse, your friend, your coworkers, people. So you could see how you could do this meditation for hours, at least for 30 minutes to an hour. You could practice it, I mean, each day, a different person or a different situation. So this is Tonglen. Taking on the suffering of others is the act of compassion, isn't it? May you be free of suffering and its causes. And now we're actually doing it. We're practicing that. And in taking on suffering, we're destroying our self-cherishing selfishness. And then we're actually giving happiness and its causes, which is, again, love. May you have happiness and its causes. May you be free of suffering and its causes. As compassion, as we breathe in the suffering, as we breathe out the light, we're giving others happiness and its causes. That's love. So we practice compassion and love. Start with ourselves and then begin to work with other people. Eventually, you know, again, if you read the text, It's like, you know, you go from yourself to friends, family, and so forth. Eventually you get to strangers, and then you get to enemies, people that you feel aversion toward. And then you can, if you really want to take it to the next, to the highest level, you start working with the beings in the different realms of samsara, like the hell realms. Again, you may not have any faith in these, but, you know, the Buddhist worldview is that if you, you know, live a hellacious existence, the karmic seeds have been planted for you to have a future rebirth in that kind of existence. So anyway, this, imagine all the beings in the hell realms and all the beings in the hungry ghost realm and the animal realm and the human realm and the jealous god realm and then the deva realm. Now the devas are a little different because that's the, I kind of joke about that, but that's kind of the inside the beltline crowd. It's like the, it's like the Hollywood crowd, you know, the people who, they look nice, they got a lot of money, they always have a smile on their face until something goes wrong, you know. But they're suffering. They're caught in this whole process called samsara. And it's very difficult to develop compassion for people that seem to have it together. Like they, oh, he's so cute, you know, she's so this, that. You know, we have all these wonderful adjectives for the haves in the world. And they don't have, the one thing they don't have is freedom from suffering. And when they die, said the last week of the life of a god realm or a deva realm is worse than eons in the hell realm. It's so bad. So we just have to keep in mind that everybody is worthy of our compassion and our loving kindness. And so then the next step is this supreme wish, this aspiration, and it's the aspiration to achieve, is to actually liberate beings from suffering, whatever, wherever they are, and sort of hold their hand, guide them from their current place of suffering, of dukkha, and guide them to supreme enlightenment. As Lama Zopa says, by myself alone. That's what I'm going to do. And that's my, this is the heroic, I mean, you could say it's ridiculous. In a way, it is ridiculous because it hadn't been done yet. Number one, and it's a, and who would, you know, what kind of megalomaniac would ever make such a statement? But it's an attitude that we need to warm up to and hopefully be able to develop. That we, you know, this is the attitude of a spiritual warrior, of a spiritual warrior called a bodhisattva who's willing to take on the suffering of the world in order to help guide beings from misery and to supreme happiness. You know, what an amazing attitude to have. Just an attitude. It's totally antithetical to what? Egocentricity, our biggest enemy. Totally antithetical to our worst enemy. And then, of course, is bodhicitta. The next step is we realize, hey, I don't have it together. As much as I... Bodhicitta has two aspects. One is the wish to free beings from suffering and to guide them to supreme enlightenment. And the other aspect is the realization that we have to get our act together first. We have to eliminate our faults and develop our qualities. We have some compassion, we develop it infinitely. We have some wisdom, we have to develop infinite wisdom. Some power. We have to develop power to its fullest expression. And some, what's called skillful means, which is a particular quality we talk about as an enlightened being, could be with each individual, could be with you, and know exactly what practices you need to focus your energy and mind on in order to make the quickest spiritual progress, who knows exactly what to, the skillful means to know exactly what to say and do for you or to you to get you to grow spiritually. So again, I must become enlightened in order to liberate all sentient beings. So there's two things. I must liberate all sentient beings. The method to do that is what? One's enlightenment. Got to get enlightened. Got to eliminate my faults. I got to practice the path. I got to practice renunciation, bodhicitta, correct view of emptiness. I got to practice generation and completion stage tantra. I've got to practice at the very least the 10 non-virtues, avoiding them and practicing their opposite, the 10 virtues. So that's the attitude of bodhicitta. That we'll do this meditation. And that there's a mantra. We'll, you got it, Mary? I mean, Linda? I'll put Chinrezig's mantra up here. Most people know it. Om Mani Padme Hum. Don't ask me what it... Well, I know what it means, but I don't know what it means. Hail to the jewel in the lotus. But there are a lot of literal, specific meanings to each syllable, each word. Om Mani Padme. The Tibetans say, they pronounce it Pene, but whatever. Padme is the Sanskrit way it's written. And then Hum. So all mantras start out with an Om and they end up with a Hum. So Om Mani Padme Hum. And it's saying that just saying this mantra, it has a vibration, it has a resonation. It resonates with our, sounds a little woo-woo, but with our internal psychic system to help us develop compassion. This is the mantra of Chinrezig, and it's in it, you know, again, and I'm inviting people to open, to at least creatively align that saying this mantra will help you to develop compassion, which is really what Buddhism is all about. Okay. From beginningless samsaric lifetimes until now, I've been experiencing numberless times the sufferings of general samsara, and particularly those of the realms of the suffering transmigrating beings. Those are in the six realms of samsara, those transmigrating beings going from up, you know, to the God realm, but then down to the hell realm, and up and down, always out of control. There are no sufferings that I have not been, experiencing. If I think deeply about these, it always makes me terribly upset, and always it makes tears come out without control. In fact, I cannot let myself be under the control of the cause, the all-arising truth, those disturbing, unsubdued minds which oblige me to experience the result, true suffering. So now he's talking about ignorance being the cause of true suffering. But still following happily the evil, disturbing, unsubdued minds, the wrong conceptions, without fear or even doubt, there is no difference between me and the mindless, crazy person. If I still follow the wrong conceptions, these disturbing, unsubdued minds, it is definite that I will have to experience the sufferings of samsara without end in the future life. When I think of this from the depth of my heart, not just reciting the words, it makes me unable to eat by day and to sleep at night. It makes me vomit. It is something that cracks the heart. Therefore, this time, Now I have received the inner condition, this precious body endowed with the 8 freedoms and the 10 richnesses. We talked about the precious human life that we have. And precious because of the opportunity. We can use it to get enlightened. Which has the ability to achieve the multitudes of happiness and perfections. Now I have met the outer condition, the holy Mahayana virtuous friend. That's the teacher, the guru, who is able to grant the highest state, the state of omniscient mind, in 1 second, who is extremely difficult to meet. Now I have met the teachings of the Buddha, the only supreme medicine that dispels all the suffering of migrating beings without any exception, still seeking only temporal happiness and the peace of liberation from the bondage of disturbing unsubdued minds and karma only for myself. That is the difference between me and the foolish, dumb beast. This attitude is extremely upsetting from both sides. From one side, how shameless. And from the side of others, how extremely ungenerous, how cruel and selfish-minded. How dare I cherish myself and renounce others? Aren't the sentient beings the precious object from which one receives all happiness and perfections? All sentient beings have been my mother. There's not a single one who's not. Each one has been my mother numberless times and has each time been as kind as my present mother. At this very moment, not only are these kind mother sentient beings in great suffering, but they are also running continuously to create the cause for more suffering. There's not even a second that they experience ultimate happiness. If a mother's suffering is not alleviated by her own son, who else will do it? Even though it's up to me alone to bear the burden of eradicating the suffering of all mother sentient beings at the moment, I'm incapable of relieving the suffering of even one sentient being. But if I were to receive the enlightened holy body, just one ray of its light could ripen the minds of countless sentient beings, leading them into a state of great peace. Therefore, to release all mother sentient beings from suffering and lead them into the most sublime happiness of enlightenment, I must attain the state of Buddhahood. The attainment of Buddhahood is not without cause or conditions. The two bodhicittas are the principal cause. So the first bodhicitta, conventional bodhicitta, which is what we just did, and ultimate bodhicitta, which has to do with emptiness. I'm going to practice the profound oral teachings of transforming the mind into bodhicitta. Visualize at the level of your forehead. So this is good. You can close your eyes if you want to, but at the level of your forehead and at a distance, a body length in front is your root guru. And for most people, you don't have one, but you can imagine, maybe you're a Christian, maybe it could be Jesus. Maybe you could imagine the Dalai Lama. It could be whoever you feel embodies the highest qualities. You envision your root guru in the manifestation inseparable from thousand-armed Avalokiteshvara standing on a moon disk which rests upon a lotus. So if you look over there and if you look over there, but over here you can see there's a moon disk. So thousand-armed Chinrezig reaching out with his all-seeing, to alleviate the suffering of countless beings, is standing on a moon and a lotus. That's what he's talking about. And there's a little picture. And now, I may have to fast forward this. Now perform the seven-limb practice. So we can, there's a seven-limb prayer on page 35. So let's do that. Let's do that one together. Reverently, I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined, declare all my negative actions accumulated since beginningless time, and rejoice in the merit of all holy, ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own merits and those of all others to the great enlightenment. Now we'll make a short mandala offering. So that's right there. And so again, sometimes, you know, people have malas and they'll use that and they can do these little hand mudras. This basically symbolizes the universe and all that's good. Everything that's good in the universe, we're willing to offer everything in the universe to the holy teacher to be able to receive these precious teachings, to have the ability to solve all of our problems and make our dreams come true, particularly the dream of being able to help others as a Buddha would be able to help others. So the short mandala offering. This ground anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun, the moon. I imagine this as a Buddha fill and offer it. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Idam Guru Radna Mandala Kamya Yata Yami. Okay. And then he goes on to say, I make the following heartfelt request. Precious Guru, please grant me blessings for my mind to become Dharma, the Dharma to become the path, that hindrances in the path may not occur, to cease all the wrong conceptions and receive immediately the two precious bodhicittas. Guru Avalokiteshvara is extremely pleased with your request, and together with the lotus and the moon disc descends to the crown of your head. But now imagine that on the crown of your head is Thousand-Arm Chimrezig standing on a lotus and a moon disc. And at his heart is a disc. And it's like a sun disc, but it's actually at his heart is this disc-shaped thing. And with each verse, visualize the seed syllable Hri from Avalokiteshvara, much blissful white nectar streaming down through the center of your head. It fills your whole body, purifying all obscurations of the whole path and bringing all realizations, especially obscurations and realizations, particularly to the verse. So we're going to do the eight verses of mind training now, but what he's saying is as we say these, the mantra, and you can say the mantra and you can do two things at one time, actually. You can think of the words of the eight verses of mind training while you're saying Om Mani Padme Hum. And the visualization is that the letters of this mantra are around this sort of sun disk at our heart. And in the middle is this seed syllable called Hri, H-R-I-H. And light and nectar are coming from Avalokiteshvara and entering the crown of our head and completely purifying our body, speech, and mind. As we do these eight verses and say the mantra, we imagine that our body, speech, and mind is completely being purified. So the first of the verses is, I will always practice holding dear all sentient beings who are more precious than the wish-granting jewel with the thought of fulfilling the great success. I will always practice holding dear all sentient beings who are more precious than the wish-granting jewel with the thought of fulfilling the great success. And this verse purifies the self-cherishing thought that prevents you from holding others as most dear. And, you know, when you think about it, you can be saying the mantra as you do it. Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. Again, light and nectar entering your body through the crown of your head and purifying body, speech, and mind. As you think about there's a lot to think about, right? think about the words of the 8 verses of mind training that we'll be doing. And the second verse is, wherever I go and whomever I accompany, I will practice seeing myself as the lowest of all and sincerely hold others as supreme. So that one's, again, wherever I go and whomever I accompany, I will practice seeing myself as the lowest of all and sincerely hold others as supreme. And this purifies the self-cherishing thought that prevents you from holding others as dear and supreme. In all actions, I will examine, this is the third verse, in all actions, I will examine my own mind. The moment an unsubdued thought arises, because it endangers myself and others, immediately I will face and avert it. Again, in all actions, I will examine my own mind. The moment an unsubdued thought arises, because it endangers myself and others, immediately I will face and avert it. Again, purifying this self-cherishing thought that prevents you from confronting and averting our wild monkey mind, our unsubdued mind. The fourth verse. When seeing beings of wicked nature who are overwhelmed by heavy non-virtue and suffering, I will hold him dear, because he's so difficult to find, like uncovering a precious treasure. So let's think about that one. When seeing a being of wicked nature who's overwhelmed by heavy non-virtue and suffering, I will hold him or her dear, because they're so difficult to find, like uncovering a precious treasure. And this purifies the self-cherishing thought that prevents you from regarding harmful sentient beings as precious and dear. The fifth verse. When others out of jealousy treat me badly with abuse, insult, and so on, I will practice accepting defeat and offering the victory to others. A lot of people have a problem with this one. When others out of jealousy treat me badly with abuse, insult, and so on, I will practice accepting the defeat and offering the victory to others. And this purifies the self-cherishing thought that prevents you from accepting defeat and offering victory to others. Sixth verse, when someone I have benefited, in whom I have great hopes, gives me terrible harm, I will practice regarding him or her as my holy guru, like a teacher, like a lama. So when someone I have benefited, and in whom I have great hopes, gives me terrible harm, I will practice regarding him or her as my holy guru. This purifies the self-cherishing thought that prevents you from regarding harmful beings as like your holy guru. The seventh verse. In short, both directly and indirectly, do I offer every benefit and happiness to all my mothers, I will practice secretly taking all their harmful actions and sufferings upon myself. So this sounds like Tonglen, doesn't it? In short, both directly and indirectly, do I offer every benefit and happiness to all my mothers? That's giving part of Tonglen. You know, may you have happiness in its causes. And I will practice secretly taking all of their harmful actions and suffering upon myself. So imagine we're taking it, taking their suffering onto us. And this is something we can practice in daily life. People don't have to know what we're doing. We can be in a hospital. We could be in front of a friend or in front of somebody we're neutral with or don't like. We can practice giving them happiness and taking on their suffering. You know, practicing Tonglin. So this, it purifies the self-cherishing thought that prevents you from taking the harmful actions and sufferings of all mother sentient beings upon yourself. And the last verse, without all of these practices being defiled by the stains of the superstitions of the 8 worldly dharmas, by perceiving all dharmas as illusory, I will practice without grasping to release the sentient beings from the bondage of the disturbing, unsubdued mind and karma. That's a lot. So let me unpack that for just a minute. Without all of these practices being defiled by the stains of the superstitions of the 8 worldly dharmas. So what are the 8 worldly dharmas? Basically, we talk about pleasure and pain, gain and loss, disgrace and infamy, you might say, you're wanting approval and not wanting disapproval. So they're packaged different ways. They're said differently, but all right. So we got gain. So what we do is we attach to having things, but we attach to not losing them. We attach to deliciousness, right? So what's delicious is having things, having pleasure, having good reputation, having everything that's delicious, and their opposites are we're attached to not losing things. When we lose things, we suffer a lot, don't we? Relationships, material things. And instead, the worst of all is reputation. We're so attached to good reputation that when somebody badmouths us, we suffer tremendously. So these are the 8 worldly dharmas that we talk about. But they're not really dharmas. They're basically the mind clinging to deliciousness. And in clinging to deliciousness of the 4 positives, we create aversion toward the 4, their opposites. And it creates a lot of suffering for us. Everything we do can be plugged into these 8 worldly dharmas that causes us to suffer. So by perceiving all dharmas as illusory, that means not being inherently existent, but being empty, I will practice without grasping to release sentient beings from the bondage of the disturbing, unsubdued mind and karma. So this last verse, the self-cherishing thought, and it purifies the self-cherishing thought and the ignorance clinging to the eye, preventing you from seeing all dharmas as illusory. And now the completion. Then make this request one pointedly from the depths of your heart. To you, the most compassionate one, I'm requesting, please extend your holy hand and lead me and others into the blissful pure realm after this life. Please be our virtuous friend in all lives and quickly lead us to Buddhahood. Then think, Guru Avalokiteshvara, again, the Buddha of compassion, has accepted your request, and many nectar rays flow into your body and mind. All obscurations and negative karma, diseases and harms from spirits are instantly purified. So you want to, as much as possible, imagine that this is really happening, that Chenrezig is above you right now. All this light and nectar is coming in and purifying all negativities. The body becomes very clear like crystal. Then Guru Avalokiteshvara melts into light and absorbs into oneself. One's own holy body, speech, and mind become oneness with Guru Avalokiteshvara's holy body, speech, and mind. And so now, instead of identifying with your ordinary, limited, can't do this, not good enough, blah, 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 all the self-limiting beliefs we have. Now we're identifying, this is not tantric where we're seeing ourselves as I've only kept this far, but we're identifying with the qualities of Chinrezig, the Buddha of compassion. And that our body, speech, and mind have been transformed into the qualities of a compassionate, wise Buddha. And we think, that is me now. Recite the six-syllable mantra of Manipemi Hum throughout the whole following visualization. While one is in the form of Guru Avalokiteshvara, one emits beams from each one having Guru Avalokiteshvara on its tip. Now this is this is actually imagining that you are Chinrezig and the beams of light are coming from your heart, and on each the tip of each beam of light is another manifestation of Avalokiteshvara on the tip of the beam. Guru Avalokiteshvara sits above the crown of every single sentient being in human form. Nectar rays flow from his heart, purifying all obscurations and negative karma. At the end, Avalokiteshvara absorbs into them through their crown. Each being becomes Avalokiteshvara, visualized all in the same form. So what we've just described is, We're imagining that from our heart, beams of light went out, and on each beam of light, and each beam of light is going to these countless sentient beings, right? And on the tip of each beam of light is Chinrezig or Avalokiteshvara, who then, you know, purifies and transforms all beings and melts into them, and they literally become Buddha. So we imagine, this is kind of wild, but we're imagining that we have now enlightened all beings. That's what Bodhicitta is about. May I become a Buddha in order to enlighten all beings. But we're imagining that we're doing that now. Then make these dedication prayers. May the sufferings and the causes of suffering of all sentient beings ripen on me now, and may all sentient beings receive the whole result, my happiness and its causes, my virtue. May the precious thought of enlightenment that has not been generated, be generated. And may that which has been generated never degenerate, but always increase. In order to practice the great actions of the sons of the victorious ones, that is the bodhisattvas, for the sake of others, by completely renouncing the works for oneself, like the holy actions of the Khan founder Guru Shakyamuni, Buddha, may I never feel discouraged even for a second. Due to these merits, may I quickly achieve the state of the great compassionate one and lead all mother sentient beings, the highest noble ones, into your state of Buddhahood without exceptions. Okay, so that is one version it's a Chinrezig motivation or meditation. Generating bodhicitta using the 8 verses of mind training. 8 verses of mind training is in here somewhere. I'm not sure where it is.
It's in the Gold Prayer Book, it's on page 161.
Now, the 8 verses of mind training are a little bit, to be sure somebody out there has got a problem with one of those verses. When I mention those verses, anybody have any thoughts or any comments about them? So, for example, verse number 5, when others out of jealousy treat me badly with abuse, insults, and so on, I'll practice accepting defeat and offering the victory to others. So, I mean, I've heard the Dalai Lama answer this one a bunch of times. And he says, no, we're not supposed to be a doormat. That is not the point. That is not the point at all. We're trying to train purify our self-cherishing thought. And, you know, we, of course, we have to stand up for ourselves. We don't, We're not supposed to become a doormat and let people walk over us. But if there's a situation in where we can let somebody else win and we take the loss, and it's not going to, you know, be a, you know, it's not going to destroy us, then why not? Why not train our mind to take the loss and give others the victory like that? So these 8 verses of mind training are very, very cool and bring up a lot of questions. All right, so let's do our dedication. Any questions before we wrap it up? I don't see any hands going up or down. I'm sorry, did you raise your hand? No? Okay. So let's do the dedication verses on page 32. This is coming from Shanti Deva's text. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid of a little with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food, may the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains, a bountiful harvest. May all medicines be effective, wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be free from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. Okay, so thank you. So this week, my request, because it is the last week of the course, is to do the 11-point meditations that we did in the very first class on how to generate bodhicitta. That's something I'd like for you to do every day. You know, it's really combining, you know, it's combining both the 7-point cause and effect method of developing bodhicitta with the exchanging of self and others into these 11 meditations, said to be the most powerful meditations to do to develop the bodhicitta. So that's what I'd like for you to do this week. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Don. And that 11-point meditation is posted with the homework. If you have any problems finding that, just email me, program.linda@kadampa-center.org. All right. Thanks, everyone. Thank you, Don.
Thank you, Don. Thank you, Linda.
Thank you, Linda. Bye. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll see you next week. Thanks, everyone.